Hello and welcome to Renovatus. My name is Kevin Woods, and it's been my distinct joy and privilege to pastor the Renovatus Church of Christ for several years, and it's the best thing in my life and my world right now. Every week, we say something about, hey, be generous. In this time of concern and panic, you be a source of kindness and reaching out, and we encourage folks to give at Renovatus and to give generously to Renovatus. We encourage people to invest their time and their talent and their treasure. It's just part of our language. It's part of our worship. The last few weeks, we've been a trusted voice in your world and in your life. I hope that we've said some things and established some things that make you go, I can see God moving in this glimpse, in this snapshot that I've got of that church. It's important to have those trusted voices, but sometimes it's important to pay close attention to other voices. So in Corpus Christi, Texas, 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, exactly right now, the Bank of America was doing down there on Mission Street, they were doing a huge renovation, and it was big enough that they had to close down that branch for a few weeks. And one of the last things they did was to hire a company to come in and change out all of the locks. And Dave was the guy that was changing out all the locks. The bank was empty. He took care of the very last lock, which was into the room on the backside of the ATM machine. And the door closed behind him, and he was locked inside. And his phone was in the car in the parking lot. He could have pounded on the door, but there was nobody there to answer. And after waiting for a while, he began to shout, "Help me!" He got this clever idea of writing some words on receipts, so that he could stuff them through a slot. His receipt said, "Please help, I'm stuck in here and I don't have my phone. Please call my boss," and he would include the phone number. And so people would come and use the ATM and get that receipt and go, that's weird. Practical joke. And they would move on. Several slips did he write. Several receipts did he ruin. And nobody helped him. And so he resorted to his first line of attack. He began to scream at the top of his lungs. And finally, somebody, as they were using the ATM machine, went, "Do you hear that? Hello? Hello?" And 2 hours later, Dave was rescued, and life is good in Corpus Christi, Texas. Sometimes you need trusted voices. I want to be one of those. Sometimes God sends some voices that you're going, this is kind of weird. Did you hear that? I hope that you are generous, whether it's Renovatus or some other beautiful human being-focused sharing organization. Whatever it is, be generous, be kind, and we are going to have some serious worship that's already begun. Thanks for being here. So, conflicted. This is a tough topic, all right? And you're going to have to give me a little bit of slack tonight because I'm talking about stuff that, frankly, I don't get. I mean, there's some things that I think I could talk authoritatively on, but this one stumps me. This is hard. Because I want to talk about what happens inside a cocoon. Okay, let's start right there. A cocoon is not what a butterfly comes from. A cocoon is what a moth comes from. A cocoon is something that's woven, you know, a silkworm makes a cocoon. And that's something that a caterpillar creates around it. A butterfly comes from a chrysalis. A chrysalis is a process where the caterpillar, his body becomes the shell, and it changes and morphs and hardens and hangs on a branch. But frankly, I'm going to use the words interchangeably because I'm a preacher and not an entomologist. So there you go. So the time comes when the cocoon is in place. What happens inside a cocoon is anything but rest. What happens inside that casing is, well, it's the definition of conflict. The very biological enzymes that cause that caterpillar to become an eating machine and does nothing for his entire life but consume is the very thing that begins to work inside the cocoon, and those enzymes begin to digest the caterpillar from the inside out. Does that change the nature of that song that we just sang? Inside out? He begins to destruct himself from the inside out. Moment by moment, layer by layer, it actually happens comparatively rather quickly. Until the cocoon is reduced to goo. Soup. A gelatinous mess. That's what's inside a cocoon. There's not a cute little butterfly inside there. As a matter of fact, those enzymes do their job to the point that there is nothing left but cells that are now broken down to a reality that says they're all the same. They're all interchangeable. But I said that kind of wrong because it's not all of the cells. From the very moment that creature was an egg, there were some cells, some disks that are called imaginal disks. And the imaginal disks, they keep track of what to do. There's just a few of them within each cocoon comparatively, but each one of them holds the map. Each one of them holds the blueprint of what this creature was made to be. And so inside that dark place, all of those cells that have been broken down to nothingness now have a building block process and now have an architect that says, and these cells will become eyes, and these cells will become thorax, and these cells will become wings. There's no rest in there. There's harsh deconstruction, an amazing reconstruction. His body has to be broken down entirely. That's what's going on. That process is even engaged beforehand. There's a cell that is at work in the caterpillar called juvenile cells that make the caterpillar remain juvenile. It keeps it young. It keeps those components in place that cause him to be an eating machine. And if those juvenile cells stop doing their job, then he moves toward metamorphosis too quickly and he will not survive. But just at the right timing, metamorphosis happens. It can't happen too early. It can't happen too late. Life will cease to exist. In the soup, there's conflict. One other tidy little cool thing, I think. There's evidence that a moth or a butterfly remember. There's evidence that they recall what happened to them before. I don't know if that's good news or bad news. It's just part of the mystery. Mysterious things happen in that chrysalis. Mystery is part of the process. So while I'm talking about what I don't know what I'm talking about, while I'm sharing information that I can share the information, but it's too big for me to grasp, I get sort of comfortable there because mystery is supposed to be part of our existence on this planet. There's too much to absorb. We do our best to try to make sense of everything and every process and everything we sort of understand, but the truth is there's just stuff that we'll never grasp that's beyond us. And let's be honest, there's beauty and security and delight when one is observing mystery. And there is anxiety and sheer terror when one is engaged in mystery. You might love to read a lovely mystery novel, but not one of us has a heart's desire to be a part of a murder mystery novel. You know, there's some things that are great to observe and understand from a distance, but to be in the middle of it, to be in the middle of a mystery itself it's stressful. It's anxiety producing. Your fears and anxiety that you may have known because of this coronavirus are legitimate, are understandable. There's stuff that we're waiting to understand. I don't want to ruin this for you, but there's going to be stuff about this that we're never going to understand. That's why science has said, okay, you don't have to wear a mask. Oh, never mind. Everybody has to wear a mask. Okay, we used to think this, but now we think this. And every time everybody sounds really sure and really positive, but the truth is, it's a mystery. I don't know what that caterpillar experiences. I don't know if there is anxiety. I don't know if there's fear. I don't know if there's hopefulness or hopelessness. I don't know if there's a deep awareness of the process or if he's totally checked out. All I know is the whole process is conflicted. And that conflict is real. And the pain and the frustration is genuine. So we've been using as our map along the way, the book of Colossians. And tonight I want to encourage you to jot down some passages because there's going to be some great ones that I'll read. But this is kind of the stuff that when you're frustrated and you're being led about by your fears, this might be good news for you. In Colossians, Paul, the writer, is addressing the internal conflict that's going on in that church, the church in Colossae and two other nearby cities, and the disruption that it creates. And he introduces, in the middle of helping them to come to grips with the conflicts, the idea of mystery. Let me read to you Colossians chapter 2. Colossians 2, verses 2 and 3 say these words. I want you believers to be encouraged and knit together by strong ties of love. I want you to have complete confidence that you understand God's mysterious plan, which is Christ himself. In him lie all the hidden treasures of wisdom and knowledge. He says, I want you guys to understand this. The mystery is Jesus himself. His presence, his ministry, his activity on this planet, that's the key of you getting not just through a pandemic, a simple pandemic that comes and goes throughout the history of humankind, but the human existence is best explained when you have as the pinnacle, as the place where you choose to believe and trust from here is the source of understanding all this mystery, and that is Jesus Christ. guys, when you feel like you're being reduced to soup, when you're just concerned that you may not make it through this moment, there is an imaginal cell. There is an imaginal disc that is placed within every single one of us from the moment of our beginning, and that is Jesus Christ Himself. The only hope you have is Him. And I got to confess to you, I place my trust in lots of other things. So my security comes from my income, or my security comes from my relationships, or my marriage, or my security comes from a career, or my security comes from my beauty, obviously. I find security in all this stuff. And all the stuff around me is good, but it's not best. And if I find my identity in those secondary things, I'm always going to wonder and I'm always going to be drawn, because those secondary things, they have a gravity that draw us in. Those treasures that are hidden in the darkness, in the deepness of the chrysalis itself, offer us hope. And the hope that we hold on to is Him. Battles occur. And I don't want to imply that if you're engaged in battle, it's because you're not trusting Jesus. Oh my goodness, that's so not what I'm saying. Otherwise, I'd be lying to you and I'd have to find some other career. The truth is, the battles are real. What I want to encourage you with is to hope that Jesus is the one that's going to make sense of the soup that's around you, of the goo that you're being reduced to. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Goo Church of Christ. It doesn't sound good. It's not helpful, really, unless you accept it as the truth. As you read Colossians, here's an exercise I'll give to you. As you read the book, notice how extreme Paul gets. That is, pay attention to his language. Notice how many times he uses the word all, or never, or always, or every time. Time and time again, as he's communicating these people who are deep in the middle of soupiness, how many times he says to them, guys, every time, at all times, you can be assured. And he's just really black and white. He's really extreme. He's really emphatic. And he's really very clear about saying to you, you can have hope. So as you read that, notice how extreme it is. And I challenge you to start leaning into that and saying, man, he sounds really hopeful. He sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Let me just say, it's not a Paul thing. It's a Jesus thing. What I want you to hear as you read the book of Colossians is Jesus is saying to you, I got this. I can handle this. I'm the source. I want to challenge you to trust Jesus. But it is mysterious. It's hard. It's challenging. So let's look back at Colossians again. This is from chapter 1. In chapter 1, verses 15 and 16, Paul writes, Christ is the visible image of an invisible God. He existed before anything was created and is supreme over all creation. For through him, God created everything in the heavenly realms and on earth. He made the things that we can see and the things we can't see, such as thrones and kingdoms and rulers and authorities in the unseen world. Everything was created through him and for him. Wow. You want to talk about mystery? He just says a bunch of stuff that I'm going, I don't even know what he says. Here's what I do know. It happens with things that I don't grasp, like thrones and kingdoms and rulers and butterflies. Chrysalises and caterpillars. There's stuff that I don't get. Here's the hope nugget. I mean, the hope disc in the midst of all that. He created caterpillars. Trust the one who created this process that says this egg becomes this worm, and this worm becomes this cocoon, and this chrysalis becomes something beautiful. Isn't it amazing the contrast between caterpillar and butterfly? One is an eating machine and can destroy, a group of caterpillars can destroy a shrub or a tree. Tent caterpillars in the Pacific Northwest are remarkably ugly when there is a huge infestation. But a butterfly no longer eats anything he drinks. A butterfly is not even the same image externally or internally. It's not the same. So this Paul guy, you need to be aware that he's writing this from prison. He's trying to help these people find their hope, and he's in a jail cell. Several of his letters were written while he sat in the dark. Another Paul thing is this. When he writes his letters, what he usually does is he writes about the deep theology at the beginning of the letter, and then at the end, he says, okay, now here's how you put it into practice. He does theology, then he does ethics. He does the why stuff, and then he does the how-to stuff. So listen to what he says in chapter 4. This is from chapter 4, verses 2 through 6. Devote yourselves to prayer with an alert mind and a thankful heart. Pray for us too, that God will give us many opportunities to speak about his mysterious plan concerning Christ. That's why I'm here in these chains. Pray that I will proclaim this message as clearly as I should. Live wisely among those who are not believers and make the most out of every opportunity. Let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will have the right response for everybody. Now I'm looking at verse 3 again, chapter 4, verse 3. Pray for us too that God will give us many opportunities to speak about his mysterious plan. It wasn't just Colossians. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 7, Paul was talking about the message that he preached to those Jesus followers as he says this. The wisdom I speak is the mystery of God, his plan that was previously hidden, even though he made it for our ultimate glory before the world began. He writes to his friend Timothy in 1 Timothy 3:16, where Paul's talking to him about how to live a faithful life. And right in the middle of that, he jumps to talking about Jesus, where he says, without question, this is the great mystery of our faith. Christ was revealed in a human body and vindicated by the Spirit. He was seen by angels and announced to the nation. He was believed in throughout the world and taken to heaven in glory. Holy cow. I mean, holy Jesus. This is so amazing and so remarkable. It's crazy. It's confusing. It's mysterious. And all I want to do tonight is encourage you to embrace the mystery. In Western thinking, understanding and breaking things down into tidy little knowable bits of information is really sold us down the river. It really hasn't served us well because there's so much about life on this planet that is absolutely a mystery and hard for us to grasp. That phrase, treasures hidden in the darkness, it's found in several places in the Bible. But an interesting place is Isaiah chapter 45. As we wrap up, I want to tell you a story. Isaiah is writing to the people of Israel, and he's saying, you need to trust the one who's leading us. And occasionally he tosses in some hard things. And also sprinkled out throughout the Isaiah book is indications that there's a Messiah. There's one who's going to save us. In chapters 40, but especially chapter 45, he starts talking not just in broad generalities, But he starts talking specifically. He's naming names. He starts talking about Cyrus, king of Persia. Now, Persia was an oppressive nation. It was a pagan nation. They had nothing to do with Jehovah and wanted no part of him. But Isaiah says, Cyrus, here's some truths about him. And in chapter 44, verse 28, he refers to Cyrus as God's shepherd. As a matter of fact, the name Cyrus in the Elamite language means shepherd. In chapter 45, verse 1, he's referred to by Isaiah as God's anointed. When Jewish people heard that those words from Isaiah, they went, anointed? You mean the Messiah? Cyrus is going to be the Messiah? Anytime they heard that phrase, God's anointed, they automatically assumed this is Messiah language coming from the prophet. Chapter 46, verse 11, God says, he's a man of my counsel. In chapter 48, verse 14, it refers to him as one who is loved by Jehovah. In chapter 45, verse 1, he's referred to as by Isaiah as God's right hand. In chapter 46, verse 11, God says, and I find pleasure in Cyrus. In chapter 45, verse 22, he is called the Savior of all mankind. Now, that's one thing to hear about all this when it's a pagan king. That had to be startling. All of this was being spoken by Isaiah 200 years before Cyrus was born. That phrase that is found in Isaiah 45:3, where God is saying, Cyrus, you are going to find treasures in the darkness. All of that has to do with something in a pagan family for a baby that won't be born for generations. I'm just saying all of that to say this. It's not what you know, it's who you know. The one who knows the trajectory of his people can, with a shrug of his shoulder, say, oh, and by the way, 200 years from now, there's going to be a baby born in a family, and I'm going to use him. Cyrus had no awareness, and so later on in the story, when Cyrus discovers that he is part of the prophecy, he began to reach out, and he was part of the salvation plan. As a matter of fact, the Israelite people were carried from their homes by the Babylonians, and after a period of time, guess who took over and conquered the Babylonians? It was the Persians, led by a guy named Cyrus. So I just encourage you to trust the who. I just encourage you to not fear the darkness, but engage it. You don't have to like it, but I encourage you to trust that God's going to be found in the darkness. He may be making something beautiful out of the goo. So hold on and don't give up. And trust the one who made the process. It's important for us to, when we get to moments of trust, to be willing to cry out. And so we sang that song where together we said, my heart and my soul, I give you control. Consume me from the inside out. Lord, my soul cries out. So I'm going to ask Jason to lead that song with us one more time. And I need you to listen to the words. And I encourage you to cry out to God. Thanks for checking in tonight. Let's sing one more song.
A thousand times I've failed, still your mercy remains. Should I stumble again, I'm caught in your grace. Everlasting, your light will shine when all else fades, never ending. Your glory goes beyond all fame. Your will above all else, still my purpose remains. Shouldn't have losing myself in giving you praise everlasting. Your light will shine when all else fades, never ending. Your glory goes beyond all fame. My heart and my soul, I give you control. Consume me from the inside out, Lord. Let justice and praise become my embrace, to love you from the inside out. Everlasting, your light will shine when all else fades, never ending. Your glory goes beyond all fame, and the cry of my heart is to bring you